Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for the Catbird Seat, the ESPN Sweet Spot White Sox blog. You can find this podcast on our website, because that's a very logical place to put it, on iTunes by searching the Catbird Speaks, or you can find it on our Podbean page, but I don't really know how to tell you how to find that. So good luck with that. Anyway, joining us today is Ethan Spaulding in Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey.
Hello, Ethan. I'm James Fegan, the editor of the Catbird Speaks. No, the Catbird Seat. Both, really. Joining you from Elkhart. And today we have a frequent guest and friend of the blog, Mal Rubio of 2080 Baseball.
Is this our first time with Mal since he joined 2080?
I think it is. Last time I was here, it took us 40 minutes to start because the call kept dropping.
Did that have anything to do with 2080?
Not that time, no.
Bill's had it come through and his internet was shady from that.
That's right. That's right. This time we were just late because, I don't know, actually.
You're joining us from your Lakeview apartment, if I understand.
Ravenswood, it's worse. My comfy Ravenswood studio. It's a good little setup here.
How's the Mexican food up there?
Really bad. Terrible. There's one decent spot, and then there's a bunch of chipotles. And I don't want to die, so I'd rather eat at the really skeevy Mexican place.
It's weird how the situations flip where that's where you go for safety.
I've said this many times, but like I've eaten at some of the worst, like clearly drug front Mexican places in Chicago, and I've never had a problem. Never.
They don't have a problem either with health inspectors.
I mean, you know.
Because of the drugs.
Right, the drugs and the bribes, mainly. Mainly the bribes.
It's really late in the year to still be talking, you know, roster trading and all that, and like while the current roster is actually working out in uniform. But the White Sox acquired a former MVP today. Don't do that all the time. Jimmy Rollins, who won the MVP last when Ethan was how old?
12? 12. 6? 12?
12. Jesus. It was 07, and I was 12 in 07.
Basically, trying to like weigh out whether or not a completely washed-up former MVP is better than Tyler Saladino, like no MLB bat at all.
Is just like for trivia, is Rollins the first MVP the Sox, like former MVP the Sox have had since Thomas? Did Griffey ever win an MVP?
He had to have.
I don't.
No, they've had.
I want to say
former...
Griffey never did.
Did Manny win an MVP?
I think Manny won an MVP. I feel like he did.
Griffey won the 98 MVP. No, 97. So when I was 2. And Manny, I don't know. Manny never won an MVP. His highest ever was third place. He got fourth in the NL MVP in that insane 2008 year where he only played like a few games. He was traded on like the, what, it was like mid-July that Jason Bay Ramirez trade went down, and then he just went absolutely batshit for half a year, and then he got suspended.
Yeah, because he hit like, what, .399 was like an insane slugging percentage or something like that?
He hit .396 with a .489 OBP and a .743 slugging.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like half
like
a season
murdered
of Barry Bonds.
A really good Cubs like World Series dreams in the playoffs that year.
Just eviscerated the Cubs in that 3-game sweep. Like that Cubs team was the best team in baseball by a fucking mile, and he just ate them alive.
Well, that Ryan, like the first game with the Ryan Dempster grand slam, like he just knew that it felt like the entire series was over. But you know,
that has to be like a sobering reminder for them this year. Like, hey, remember the last time we had a juggernaut team and just like a random old person came along and murdered
our hopes? He was 36, and in 3 games he hit two home runs, hit 500 at the 643 slug or on base, and a 1.1 slugging. He was like Schwarber on steroids from this year's NLDS.
Don't they have to just like fear like some random ass shit like Albert Pujols gets traded mid-year and like just beats the shit out of them on one leg for like a week in the playoff series?
He doesn't even have to get traded.
Miggy does it in the World Series.
Yeah, he does it. He can do it in the World Series.
Albert Pujols gets get traded because that Angels team isn't making the fucking playoffs. They're so bad, other than Trout.
Yeah.
Like if they didn't have Trout, and I mean if they replace Trout with like a league average player, they're probably like top 10 draft pick team.
And that will immediately become their number one prospect.
Oh, by a fucking mile. Their second round pick and third round pick would be their number one and two and three prospects. Especially because they're trading more prospects in this three-way with the Reds and the Blue Jays.
You guys really want to talk about that trade, like, more than the Jimmy Rollins signing.
Well, because Jay Bruce is, like, mind-bogglingly bad. Like, yeah. He does the things you would expect a power hitter to do well, but he's garbage. He's a bad player. Like, in spite of everything that he does well, it's just, he's terrible.
Yeah, Mallard
to be so bad.
That's the fun part about it. Like, Mao had a good point that he hit 26 home runs last year with a walk percentage of 9, like he had a 9% walk percentage, an ISO of 209. All those things seem nice, and yet he was still 9% below league average as an offensive player. Like,
he didn't strike out a 0.1 WAR.
Yeah, he was like terrible. Over the last 2 years, he's been the same, like, relative to league average, as good of a hitter as Avisail Garcia. Among players with 1,000 plate appearances or more, he has the 10th worst weighted run created plus in the last 2 years. The guy right ahead of him is Adani Hrashevia, and the guy right behind him is Alexi Ramirez.
That can't be the way you say that name.
Are they any?
Yeah, I'm not.
Hrashevia?
Hrashevia.
I was kind of close without the accent.
I think Ethan was closer.
Up for debate, I guess.
Yeah, the whole Jay Bruce market, like, for him being an actively terrible player, seemed odd.
And don't forget that he's owed $12 million this year with a $1 million buyout. So he's effectively owed $13.5 million.
That's good. That's what you want, right? Someone who hits 220 with 20 home runs and is owed $9 million is just an absolute albatross in right field.
That's Adam LaRoche.
Yeah.
That's Adam LaRoche. People seem to think he's a good defensive outfielder, but I don't think that's actually true. I think he maybe was at one point.
He's a stationary cannon at this point, so he just kind of, doesn't really get to much. When he gets to it, he can throw it pretty hard. So he's like fallen a really long way. I thought he was going to be really good. I remember being really excited about Jay Bruce, Joey Votto being in the same lineup.
Wasn't he the best prospect? Wasn't he like a top five prospect?
I think he was a top 10 at the very least, and might have been a top five in BA. I think Baseball America had him top five.
Yeah, like I remember that was. I didn't know much about prospects back then because what was that? When he came up, it was 08, so I was 13. So, but I remember, like, I think I picked him up when he got called up in my fantasy league. So that's why I remember that, and I remember him being a top prospect. So, I don't know.
Adam Dunn might have still been on that team, too, I think.
Yeah, he definitely is.
Yeah.
He was on the 08 Reds, and then he was on the Diamondbacks in 2010 and the Nationals in 2011, and then the Sox signed. Oh, no, Diamondbacks in 09, Nationals in 2010. Oh, wait, no, he was on the Nationals for 2 years. Never mind.
Yeah.
So, no, he wasn't on that team.
Okay.
Is there a James team
Bruce
that
was the number one prospect in baseball in 2008, ahead of Longoria, Chamberlain, Buchholz, Rasmus, Mabe, and Kershaw, Franklin Morales. Jesus, this top 10 is awful. Because Bruce, Longoria, Chamberlain, Buchholz, Rasmus, Mabe, Kershaw, Franklin Morales, Homer Bailey, David Price.
Franco Morales is a hell of a miss. That is a hell of a miss.
I think he's still floating around free agency right now, isn't he?
I think so. I don't know. I lost track of that guy. That's a sad list.
Yeah, and then it doesn't get much better because you get Travis Snyder with number 11. And then you get some really good players. You get Wieters, who's fine, and then Ellsbury, McCutcheon, Jake McGee, Brandon or Wade Davis, oh, and Brandon Wood.
Can't miss third base prospect, Brandon Wood. Would he still? I feel like he'd still be a top Angels prospect right now if he was still in the system.
Like him right now?
Yeah, him right now. I think he'd probably be like number five or something.
And some of these lists are always so much fun to look at because there's so many just major misses.
I still think my favorite is Joe Borchard miss because everyone got excited about Joe Borchard.
He got Mickey Mantle comps.
He got the Mantle comp. That's always good.
He had similar really, raw power.
Yeah, Borchard hit that. It's still flying, that one.
Reminds me of the home run Justin Maxwell hit off Phil Humber.
Oh my god. That ball was just smoked, like eviscerated.
Oh man, I was at Phil Umber's first home start after the perfect game, and it was against the Red Sox. He got lit up, but the worst part about it is that Felix DuBrant was starting for the Red Sox, so he got lit up, and the game lasted 6 hours. It was great.
Remember when Cubs fans were excited when the Cubs got DuBrant? Actually, I feel like every team that acquires DuBrant gets excited about DuBrant, even though he's terrible.
He's never been good. I don't understand why people get, like, happy about it.
It's the most Red Sox, like, semi-prospect hype thing ever. Like, just, like, he wasn't ever good, but he was young and he played for the Red Sox. So he goes from untouchable prospect, even though never was a good prospect, to bad pitcher, to, like, oh, we have to get this guy on the waiver wire. It's gonna be Henry Owens in 3 years.
It's already Manny Margot. Just wait Margot? Until some of that shine comes off. Yeah, just wait until some of that shine comes off the Margot prospect profile.
So Jimmy Rollins plays for the White Sox now. Does he have anything left?
No, I mean, he had a pretty good year last year. I believe I've seen
no,
it.
No, he didn't.
He compared favorably to Alexei Ramirez. So if you use pretty good year last year by those metrics, the answer is no. But I don't think you really could have started Tyler Saladino out there for an entire year because I think his limitations become really apparent every day that you start marching him out there. You know, he's a nice fill-in shortstop. He's someone who can kind of play all over the place. But Saladino is your everyday guy for 162 games. It's just not a good idea. So I think Rollins is probably someone that gets you to maybe even Tim Anderson this year. And it's just kind of like a stopgap. And if he finds a little bit of magic for a couple of months, a la Emilio Bonifacio or some of those older vet guys, then you take it. I mean, he's a professional guy, and he's played baseball forever. But I mean, if you're really expecting, you know, Jimmy Rollins to come in here and be the everyday starting shortstop for the entirety of 2016, then a lot of things went really poorly for the White Sox.
What about where they spent the entire offseason planning for Tyler Saladino? Does that count as things going really poorly for them?
Basically, go ahead.
He did have a 97 weighted run created plus in the second half last year. And, like, talking to Dodgers, people who watch the Dodgers a lot, he looked, like, significantly better. So, I mean, I think the dude can still hit okay for a shortstop, but the defense hurts you. I think he's a significant upgrade over Saladino. If Saladino's spelling him at least once a week because he's old, he probably needs some rest. But he's obviously not good. But, like, the fact is, Saladino's so bad that you don't have to be good to be an upgrade. You don't have to be good to make this team better. And, like, I think that another important point is that the probability of both him and Saladino being, holy shit, we are so screwed by putting this guy out there bad, is a lot lower than just the probability of Saladino being that bad, because that probability with Saladino was pretty damn high. And with Saladino, and Rollins, you got a pretty good chance that you're not like terrible in that lineup spot every day, which is really nice compared to past years. And it's a black holes really, like, when you're just absorbing that much, when you're like that many outs from one spot in the lineup, it just, like, I think it's even more diminishing to your offense than linear weights would, linear weight approximations of value would even say it is. So I think that having even just an okay hitter rather than a 60 weighted run created plus hitter is a pretty big deal.
It's a big deal if you can, I mean, at shortstop, you got to be able to supply the defense to justify getting you out there every day. So, I mean, you know, along your points, like, Rollins showed signs last year that he can be around league average or at least non-terrible, which, again, considering all the risk that's inherent, that's laced into this White Sox lineup, they just need a little bit of solid production from a couple of spots that they can depend on to survive in case anybody just starts to completely deflate in April. But I keep going back to the point where it's like, if that guy's out there every day for 162 games all year, like, it's just, it's not a good outlook because of all the stuff he's giving away defensively.
I was going to jump in.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's Nick Schaefer.
Rolling in late. but I don't know if this has already been addressed, but to me, I mean, just the presence of Rollins is, to contrast it to years past where they've had a guy who sort of like a probably a bench player who's fringy and doesn't have a great track record. You know, I even think back to like someone like Brent Morrell or right, where it's like, the odds are, it's a non-zero chance that they could be serviceable, but there's a lot of risk in them just being unusable. And then there's like no plan B behind it. So like Rollins, I wouldn't want him to be the everyday shortstop. Saladino, I wouldn't want him to be the everyday shortstop. Ditto for Sanchez. But just having like an extra option there gives you that much more in-house just sort of stuff to throw at the problem. So.
That's basically my takeaway from like why as much as you can like a depth signing or a minor league signing, I really like this. I mean, there's no risk if he's completely washed in spring training, you cut him and you don't even owe him the $2 million. If he makes the big league club, you owe him $2 million. Whatever. I mean, maybe for this team, it's not whatever but that's another conversation. But I mean, I think it is just a much more production out of a spot in the lineup where it looked like you were going to get like really good hitting pitcher production. Like that's how Tyler Saladino hits. And people talk about Saladino as if he's some defensive whiz, 'cause he looked really good at third base defensively last year. But throughout, Nick and I were talking about this earlier today, throughout the minors, he was considered a like passable defensive shortstop, not an elite defensive shortstop, not someone who can make up for the fact that he can't hit major league pitching defensively. Like he was
and a lot of him being passable would be for like short periods of time based on his arm and his actions. How his arm compares now to how it was pre Tommy John, or if that's even an issue. But his range was the thing that people were worried about, and I just don't know how much more range he's going to have at 26 than he had at like 22.
I mean, one of the things that, you know, that older players can kind of figure out is just they pick up a little bit of quickness, but in Saladino's case, it just the natural baseball instincts at shortstop just weren't, it's not there. It's funny because you're only moving over like about 20 feet over to the left, but the reads off the bat at third base are completely different than the reads you get off the bat at short. So your lateral movement has to be greater, and your first step at quick, like your first step quickness has to be greater. And he doesn't have that in the bag. So I don't think he's an everyday guy, not at short. It's always going to be a third base / shortstop profile.
And he can't hit enough for that. Like that. No. It'd be nice if he could hit, because he's really good defensively at third. Like he made some really cool plays at third, but you can't be, there's no Angelton Simmons of third base. Like, it just doesn't work that way. You need some offensive production. Thankfully, we don't need to deal with that because they got Todd Frazier for basically nothing prospect-wise. They gave up a reliever and a fourth outfielder and a guy who's fast but can't really play baseball.
Is Trace Thompson this year's like Semien, where it's like he's not a full time player, but the roster is like really going to miss him. Like he would have been really useful. He would have been really useful for this roster
if they get to the start of the season where they're really missing Trace Thompson, they really fucked up.
Back to roster construction, though, because that's, I mean, if you miss Trace Thompson, it's because of the inaction that you're having right now. You got Fowler who's sitting out there, you know, you can sign out to a contract. Even Austin Jackson, you can kind of plug him in. Like anything that pushes Abasilio Garcia out of the lineup is going to lessen the chances that you're going to be missing Trace Thompson. Because I would take Trace Thompson over Garcia right now. Go ahead.
It would diminish it, but I mean, somebody's going to be slid down to platoon with LaRoche. I'm just saying Trace Thompson's like would be clearly better at that than Abasilio. Obviously, that's like, you know, worrying about platoons at DH is very different from like your starting right fielder. And I've been banging the drum for them to add an outfielder all offseason, but it's more amusing to me than anything else. Obviously,
for sure, I get it. I mean, I think that the difference between missing Trace is ideally if you get Fowler or Jackson or anyone else, at least you're missing a backup outfield. Like you're missing a backup, even if he would be nice. With Semien last year, you're missing someone who would have been the third best hitter on your team.
Yeah, and he would have played either second or third, I imagine.
Yeah.
That's why when you said is Trace going to be next Semien, I thought you meant like guy who like hits 130 weighted runs created for the first 6 weeks, and like I just look at him and sob.
And then some Dodgers writer writes, "This is a down ballot MVP candidate."
And then we start creating or starting to make like these excuses for why you know some errors are good.
Oh my god. Well, it would have it was crazy though. As soon as they traded for Frazier, I learned from Dodgers writers that Micah Johnson's an elite prospect. So like that's cool. I learned a lot.
Well, he lost his hand this week, so
that Micah thing. Like, man,
he's like a cool guy and he's fast and he's so cool if he just did like even if he could play, if he could either play a position or really hit, you could deal with him because he hits okay, but you need to DH him, and you're not going to have a DH that's 85 weighted run created plus.
Maybe like a desperate rebuilding team should like try him in center or something. But like
apparently he can't read fly balls.
Oh really?
No, he's really bad at reading fly balls, and he doesn't have the arm for center either. So
he also wasn't a good base runner last year. Like made a ton of outs with really stupid reads.
He kept getting picked off, which was hilariously sad.
And then he like tried to go from first to third on a throwing error and got thrown up by like 20 feet. It was like the most disheartening moment of April. Like, the throw was in the air as he rounded second. It was like, what the
hell are
you
doing? There was no way that was the most disheartening moment of April.
No,
as far as like Micah optimism.
Okay, the most disheartening moment of April was Robin not challenging that play of Alexi Ramirez on second, and then White Sox.
I remember this.
White Sox are getting mad at us criticizing Robin for not challenging the play he should obviously challenge. The single thing that made them like the easiest part of his job was to challenge that play, and for some reason he didn't. But
was that in April?
It was either April or early May.
I thought it was later on, but I mean it doesn't.
I think the most disheartening play of April was every single Adam Eaton at bat because I knew he was better and he wasn't producing.
That was scary. And then he turned into like Michael Brantley light for the rest of the year for no reason at all.
That was cool though. I like that.
Mean
that was
Tiny
enjoyable.
White, Jason Hayward.
Oh yeah. Oh, well, no. Oh, Tiny White, Jason Hayward is the summation of the entire year. But he was way better than that for the last 5 months of the year. Like he's a better hitter he's a better hitter than Hayward's been and then at any point of his career that other than his rookie year.
I can't wait till I retweet this podcast into Cubs Twitter.
Last year they would have agreed with Ethan, but now they disagree.
Funny how that works.
I remember when people got mad at me. Like, well, for one, the funny thing is that I've been beating that drum of Eaton and Hayward are basically the same offensive player since way before the Cubs signed, like, since the offseason started. And then as soon as the Cubs signed Hayward, Chuck fucking Garfine tweets, my fat, he definitely stole from my Twitter account. And then because he
doesn't...
Oh, my
God.
He definitely...
Dude, I know the feeling because a hockey Twitter guy stole my my joke about PEDs, where like doing steroids makes you the ultimate teammate because you'll like sacrifice your health and you're like take risks to make you play better to help your team win. That bummed me out because that was my moment in the sun early on. But
and like, but with the Garfine thing is it definitely saw it from my Twitter account or someone told him it from my Twitter account, but whatever. Beyond that, he couldn't defend himself because as soon as Cubs Twitter got mad at him, he didn't understand what he was saying. So he just kind of shut up. Like it was dumb. Whereas if my tweet had gotten popular, I would have been able to defend the fact because it's true because they've been the same offensive player for the last 2 years. Like exactly.
Should he write a comic book about Jason Hayward where he transforms into a tiny white version of himself and it's socially advantageous?
Oh, that might be bleaker than it sounds.
A lot of dark avenues to explore with that comic.
So should I, to totally change the subject, should I get a Jimmy Rollins shirt or a Jerry Sands shirt? For 2016,
you want to be more. Are you an ironic person or not?
I have a Manny Ramirez 99 White Sox jersey in a double XL, and I am nowhere close to double XL.
That's amazing, actually. That's a lot of respect, honestly. But you got to wear it.
I wore it to the Cubs Sox game that I went to this year.
You got to wear it with the right jeans, though. You got to wear it with like the huge jeans.
Oh, the James jeans? Or
the James jeans.
The what? James look. You were wearing jeans in that picture. You were wearing giant shorts. giant shirt.
What the fuck are we talking about?
Your capri shorts. The picture of you with the giant white
shorts, or the giant white shirt and the giant shorts.
Oh, that was like 2007.
It still happened?
Yeah, not like 1997, dude.
There are pictures of me on Facebook from 2007, and I'm not wearing a giant white shirt and giant shorts.
Yeah, because we went balling.
I was 12.
You can ball at 12. It happens all the time. You never seen a balling 12-year-old? I have.
I think it's easier to be balling 12 than many other ages.
Yeah.
I was not balls at no one called me ball at 12, and I was definitely not balling at 12. I was a very big loser in middle school.
Do you remember that Cash Money kid from the Little League World Series?
Lil Wayne?
No. His name was Cash Money.
Oh, that?
Yeah.
He was balling. And he was like, what, 10?
Yeah, he's going to not be balling when he becomes an adult, though.
Yeah,
that's peak middle school shit.
Yeah, it's a really bad name to carry around with you.
Todd Frazier has realized that Scott Carroll is a funny person because he just tweeted that everyone needs to follow Scott Carroll, which means Todd Frazier is officially a White Sox player.
Or that Scott Carroll grabbed Todd Frazier's phone while he was doing something else.
Scott Carroll seems like a legitimately good dude, and I wish he was and his story's cool.
Yeah.
He's just not a major league pitcher, unfortunately. But he's a cool dude.
He's useful. I mean,
to eat innings on a team that's not trying to make the playoffs, sure.
I feel like there's a lot of. I feel like I don't know. It's a long season. You need dudes who can like
some swingmen.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe, in and out.
Maybe I just remember when Ethan was like 7 or 8, and like watching like Ernie Munoz and Felix Diaz trying to like
DJ Carrasco.
Carrasco's good too.
Carrasco owned. I love DJ Carrasco. Isn't he still in the majors? Like, isn't he still bouncing around? He was with the Mets relatively recently.
Ooh,
2012.
There was also a Wright. Was it like Danny Wright or something like that?
Danny Wright.
Yeah.
He was bad.
But he gave the White Sox everything he had.
the worst White Sox pitcher I've ever seen, I think, is Aaron Wasserman.
Oh, Lordy. That is...
I mean, like,
oh, it wasn't even the good spelling of Aaron either, if I remember that right.
It was E-H-R-E-N.
Yeah, it was fucking terrible. Oh, wow, I remember Aaron Wasserman.
Danny Wright once took a no-hitter into two outs of the six, or maybe six and two-thirds.
Zach Stewart almost threw a perfect game against the Twins.
But because of that, Jim Margulis from Southside Sox always says he doesn't start taking a no-hitter seriously until he gets past that part.
Makes sense. I mean,
because of this clearly awful start that was somehow a no-hitter.
Zach Stewart finishing that perfect game would have been the most amazing thing ever. Like, way more amazing than Phil Umber's perfect game that ruined his career.
Yeah. The worst White Sox pitcher I've ever seen is Todd Ritchie, just because that was every day awful, and he gave innings.
I'd say Jamie Navarro.
That's a good one.
But I mean,
yeah, Jamie Navarro's too old.
In terms of a single appearance that I remember, just like that, like thinking with all the factors considered, like this is the worst. It's still the Jose Paniagua, because that was just like on every level. He was it was 2003, I think, and the White Sox were. Actually should have won the division, and Paniagua was like a journeyman who got brought in, and he like gave up like 8 runs in like a third of an inning, and then he like flipped off the fans as he left and was like PFA'd. But he was like, he wasn't one of our guys, you know. It's like, it's not like it was a prospect that you've been following where it's like, oh no, you're just not good enough. It was like, oh, we like brought this guy in to like do this. It was, and he's like being a jerk about it. Like it was everything about it was awful. And I don't think the White Sox won another game that year. I think they went 0-30 in September. And Brad Radke pitched like 8 straight complete games against them in like 1 week in September. It was like a doubleheader. Brad Radke threw complete games. One went extra innings, and Carlos Silva came in and then threw 9 perfect innings himself. And
that
then
was fucking Radke, Milton, and fucking Carlos Silva.
Oh, and Joe Mays.
That was terrible. I hated that team. So.
No, the thing about the Twins is that they, for some reason, more than a decade later, they're still trying to only throw out their Radke clones out there. When everyone else is striking out 9 batters or more an inning, they're just throwing a bunch of Radke clones out there that aren't working, and they haven't been working for years, yet they still are lining up. Their rotation is so fucking bad this year, and people think they're a contender. Like,
yeah, Kevin so Correa. Bad. They were like, when they made that statement, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago, they were getting crucified for having the worst K rates ever. And they're like, no, like, we're very aware of it. We're going to try to address it. And they, like, signed Kevin Correa, like, that week. Oh, Tommy Malone shutting the White Sox out was also a point of last April.
Well, last year, the Cubs, or the Twins just completely eviscerated the Sox with their pitching. Like, all their pitchers. Gibson, who sucks. Malone, who sucks.
Gibson does randomly have like good. He's like he has randomly good games against other teams in the White Sox.
I went to a Chris Sale versus Alex Myers start, It was Paul Konerko day, and
the Twins scored like 50 runs off Sale last year, right?
Yeah, the Twins, crazy.
But Sale let up 4 home runs, struck out 12 batters, but lost a fucking. Alex Meyer, Trevor May, whichever one of the busted pitching prospects they have trying to work in the rotation. They're going to probably fuck up Jose Berrios too, because they're going to tell him to start pitching to contact and he's going to be garbage.
Yeah, that's not the profile you want pitching to contact either.
I know that dude's really good, and I know people think he's going to be really good.
He's really fucking good, man. I like that guy a lot. I think 2002 was like the first year when I really started paying attention to stats. So that fucking garbage show bullpen is like still has some of my favorite names in it. I think it was like it was fucking Ginter and Mike Porzio.
So those were all those guys. So a lot of those guys, like Rocky Biddle and all that stuff, and like John Adkins, those are like dudes who were lower on the dance card of those like number one farm systems headed by John Rauch.
Yep.
So, yeah. Oh, and there was, like, Aaron Mayette and...
Lorenzo Barcello, who is fucking awful, right?
The only one of those guys who turned out to be good, the White Sox, like, gave away and, like, the Twins got him because Matt Greer actually had, like, a career.
Right. That's
The guys I remember...
Gary Glover, jeez.
Yeah, it's a fucking bad name. Yeah. It's, like, a bad list.
My relief guys that I remember well, as obviously a lot more recent, are guys like Randy Williams.
God damn it! I hate
that was yesterday, Ethan. Go fuck yourself.
Randy Williams was like 4 years ago.
Oh, so long.
Was
so
he the loogie who couldn't get lefties out?
He couldn't get anyone out. He couldn't. Like,
they've had a lot of loogies.
He was 35 years old. It didn't make any sense. What was the upside there? He had never been good. He like pitched at the end of the previous year and was garbage. Or like he's our loogie for next year. You're like, what the fuck?
Antonio Ozuna was okay. I think he wasn't a loogie.
No. I remember the worst White Sox pitcher that I've ever seen. That's thrown a lot of innings. Ryan Buckbitch.
Tanyan Sturts wound up being pretty decent a few years, but yeah, not for the White Sox.
Ryan Buckbitch was so bad. Just he was one of the worst pitchers I've ever seen. And then they had that one third baseman who was like the worst hitter I've ever seen play Major League Baseball.
You're going to have to be more specific.
There's been a couple of those since.
That 2007 White Sox team was just so special. I love that team.
Oh, are you talking about Andy Gonzalez?
Yeah, Andy Gonzalez. That dude had no business playing Major League Baseball. That's what Cleo Luis Rondon would look like if he played Major League Baseball, is Andy Gonzalez.
But they probably choke up more than Andy did.
When Rob Mikoviak was their, like, big ad.
Wasn't Rob Mikoviak their big ad for the 2006 season?
Yeah.
Yes.
He was, provide utility. Like, he was going to be the offense in case Anderson's bat collapsed, but then that involved playing Mikoviak in frickin' center field.
Wasn't it also the year that Rich Hare came up?
No, Richard was in 2007 after Tadahito got traded.
Oh, right. Oh, fuck.
But Mikoviak, the story was, I'm pretty sure he was
the Phillies pitching coach's kid.
Mikoviak was like, he grew up a big White Sox fan or something, and like he was at the World Series because he was such a big White Sox fan, and then he got signed by the White Sox.
He was?
I'm pretty sure I remember that story.
Is that common for players, like, when they're freaking 30 years old, to be going to, like, their favorite team's World Series?
Man. I hated Alex Cintron so much.
Oh, that's a bad name.
Okay. Can we pull out of this?
No, man, I'm looking up at the 2000 White Sox starting rotation.
Well,
man,
you already got me look up, like, what Twins starts really irritated me. It was when the freaking 2012 team, which is, like, the best team of our, like, you know, Ethan's entire life, basically.
Of the Obama presidency, definitely.
P.J. Walters threw a complete game with 8 strikeouts against them.
Who the fuck is that?
Nobody cares. Nobody cares anymore about P.J. Walters. He is gone and passed.
Oh, how is this? This is so – all right, here's what makes me so mad. Like, the 2003 team was legitimately really good. And they just, you know, ran into some bad luck or whatever it is. This 2012 team is the thing that everyone keeps shoving in my face to be like, look, but Robin, and look, but, like, they can do stuff. And I'm looking at this team, and the first, like, two names I see are Kosuke Fukudome and Ray Olmedo. And I just want to, like,
oh, my God, Ray Olmedo.
Ray Olmedo.
So bad. That Rule 5 pick, right?
Yes.
Yeah, for, like, a division-contending team, there are a lot of guys on that team who never played in baseball again.
I'd argue they weren't playing baseball that year either.
Euclid got another year, and then he was in Japan.
Oh, they called for him to bunt.
Like, Euclid basically, like, went to the morgue after that season.
Yeah, he's died.
And then Japan.
They made glue, yeah. Out of...
Was that the year they traded for Brett Myers and everybody was pissed about it?
I think so.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pissed about it.
Fucking was Leysan Septimo giving you good innings?
So that's the thing, is when people say there's no bad minor league deal. There's no bad minor league deal. That's true, except for when you add guys like Brett Myers.
Well, yeah,
when
you acquire somebody who punched his wife with a closed fist.
Yeah, yes, I mean, I really
that's
hope
a bad minor league deal.
I'm really hoping the Sox don't sign Josh Lukey to a minor league deal.
That's the next guy that's going to end up.
If he was I might fear it.
Andrew Friedman, I do not think, is taking over the Sox, so they're probably good there. If Andrew Friedman took over for the Sox, they'd sign, like, Lukey. They'd get Manziel to play baseball again. They'd sign Michael Vick.
They'd get Uga Thurbina out of jail.
Marcus Vick.
They'd sign Marcus Vick.
Jesus. Who would have thought, man, when you were hearing all that Vick shit, that Marcus would be the one who'd be more fucked up.
Hitting coach Will Cordero.
Yeah, right. Oh.
He was actually on the White Sox. That's not as funny.
That's not far-fetched. That's the thing that happened.
I remember him playing for the team, my dad being like, you can't root for that guy. And I was like, why not? He's like, when you're older, you can't root for that guy. That's what I'm saying. So
I have no idea who it is.
Bad dude.
One of the worst, really.
Yeah. All right.
I don't see anything. What did you just get?
Now, it sounds like we're hurtling towards a reality where Tim Anderson is, like, starting mid-season. And I thought that was bad, and they were going to avoid that. So why?
I think Rollins actually successfully buys you to at least, like, June, which is better than, like, looking at Saladino with, like, a 400 OPS.
Yeah.
I think Rollins can credibly get you to the point where at least Anderson can get a half season at AAA, but maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
What he did for Seager last year is fine. Like they played him in the major leagues, and then when they made the playoffs, Seager's the starter.
Right. Like I've been on the record of saying that ideally you'd get Anderson another year in the minor leagues just to kind of make sure everything's steady. But
I didn't realize ideally meant like it will never fucking happen, but it'd be nice.
Right. Right. You don't want to bring him up like 2 weeks after the season starts. You know what I mean? You don't want to bring him up like in May.
Can you explain like specifically what he's going to be seeing in AAA that is going to help him and like what a couple months might do for him?
So
Kyle Graybeck,
AAA. Well, actually, along those lines, there's a lot of bitter ass old men in AAA. Because they don't want to be there. They want to be at the majors, and they've already had a taste of the good life. So all they do is try to fuck up young rookies or young guys who they think are up and coming. So a lot of the stuff that you see at AAA is like that bullshit reverse sequencing where it's like the backwards pitching. Guys are just generally mean. So it's like you know you're getting like the change ups, you know, first pitch change ups with like a fastball that comes in at your hip a little bit or. You know, just to kind of like some brush back pitches because like those guys, like they've already been at the major league level. They know what they're doing. They have a high pitching acumen. They're angry that they're not anywhere where they want to be.
So. Is the secondary stuff actually better than AA or like is it better in a different way or?
No, it's not. AA's like really got some of the best stuff because that's where the prospects are. And
right.
once you start getting to AAA, like the throttle kind of gets getting pulled back a little bit. Because those guys don't necessarily have their crisp stuff that they had when they were 24, 25, or 28. So it's smarter pitchers.
Gotcha.
Smarter pitchers who know how to get you out. So a lot of that happened with Javier Baez last year is that he ran into just not necessarily better stuff, but guys who knew how to exploit his weaknesses.
That's important for Tim, like very important for Tim to be
right,
able to
that's,
overcome.
Yeah, that's what I want to I have a general. That was my general impression, but I was wanted to have like Matt have a chance to like give more. I don't know.
No, I got you, man. Because it's like you know, we all know his backstory. He's pretty new to baseball, so when it comes to unlocking his natural talents, and he frequently shows what his natural talents can be, you just want to make sure that he's prepared for what's going to happen at the major league level as best as he can be. Now, nothing really is going to prepare you for what happens. But you don't want to be in there in a situation to where the dude completely sinks because he just had no idea. Like, you want to just, you know, give him an idea of, like, you know, this is how you deal with guys who are trying to get you out with the first pitch change up. And, you know, this is how you make the adjustments to that. And, you know, he's already shown a pretty impressive ability to make adjustments as he climbs levels. So, you know, if it's 200 plate appearances at AAA, that's great. And I'm satisfied with that if I'm a UVL guy.
So Law said, and obviously I agree with you, I'd liked him, you know, however much time they can buy for him down there as possible is so much the better. Keith Law said, similarly, he should get another whole year in AAA, but if they are an emergency, need to break the glass, Law said that Anderson could post like an empty 280 batting average right now and play solid to above average short right now. Do you think that's accurate? Do you disagree?
That's in the it's in the ballpark. Like, I think, you know, we saw it really driven home last year with Abisiel Garcia. Power isn't necessarily about the natural ability that you have, like, already. It's not about, like, your strength or, like, how quick your bat is. It's about being able to get the pitches that you want and being able to really do damage on those pitches. So your average raw power, or, like, your raw power is what helps you unlock your in-game power, right? But what really, really unlocks it in-game is your ability to get the fastball that you want in the quadrant that you want and just really just wail on that sucker. And just your in-game at-bats, your in-game, you know, acumen being at the point to where you can really take advantage of, you know, really seeing the ball. So, you know, Tim Anderson has the ability to hit for maybe even some sneaky solid average power. But if you bring him up right now, he doesn't have the acumen. He's really be fighting in every at-bat and trying to make contact. And so that power won't come along.
And so he would just be hitting, like, very defensively the whole time.
Yeah.
And isn't the worry that that would really stun his – that could potentially really stun his growth if he is forced into a situation where he's doing that rather than working on developing just being a good overall hitter?
Right, because you're working on trying to survive and trying to tread water instead of really succeeding. So
it seems like that's what the Cubs really focus on, is, like, making sure you thrive at every level and then move up after that.
Right, because, or even, you know, if you struggle a little bit, you got to find success before you get to move up the level. So it's like you have to have, and it's like what the Cubs do is they target a very specific type of hitter, and I mean that type is very obvious. It's polished power hitter, but like you have to make sure that developmentally you're giving the player every opportunity to succeed that you can. So like it's just there's so much that goes into development, and it really starts with player scouting and player evaluation and identifying the type of talent that you believe you can utilize to the best of your ability in your organization. And really, Tim Anderson is going to be a very big litmus test for what this White Sox organization wants to do for the next couple of years, because he's like, that's the dude. You know what I mean? Like, that's the dude who has the highest upside in their system right now, and that's one of the highest position players that they've had probably since Gordon Beckham. And that's, you know, they messed up Beckham. I don't think there's a lot of ways around that one. So we're going to see with Tim Anderson what happens there.
It's funny how much the views on Tim Anderson really, like, separate from outlet to outlet. Like, everyone agrees on his upside. His upside's basically, like all-star level shortstop. Like, what Ian Desmond was really good with the Nationals. And...
maybe like more speed, less home run power, but yeah,
right. Yeah. Like, he's probably not approaching 30.
Maybe more average though too. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, I didn't mean to but interrupt. No. Those are good points. But like that good of a player, but BP has him in the 20s. MLB has him in the 40s, and like, or BA has him in the 40s, and Law has him in the 50s. Like, it's pretty split, and it really. It's not. I don't think it's just about like, oh well, this outlet values upside more. I think like there's a lot of different opinions on how likely he is to reach his upside, which makes it interesting. My impression is that a lot of people seem to think he is very, very high makeup guy, which would seem to play into the fact that he's new to baseball. He's very raw. Like, it helps to have good makeup there. But well, I mean.
A question for something that's interesting to me is I've seen really split opinions on his glove, and I just wanted to check with what Mal thought, because it's like a threshold question. If he can play good defense at short, then his floor all of a sudden is like, you know, I feel like his floor becomes like a major leaguer, and then it's just a question of just how good his bat is. I mean, do you think that it's like he projects to be a good glove, or do you think like if you were just like, hey, go defend at short, if he would, how he would handle himself there, like now or versus a year from now, or however you want to approach it?
I have him at average to solid average. So, you know, the thing that it comes back to with his defensive ability is how well his hands play. And at that point, you know, organizationally, you have to make a decision on where you think his skill set better utilizes itself. You know, because if it's an average glove at short, but he's got 80 speed and he can be almost an elite defender in center field, like, what do you want to do and how do you want to weight that? Do you want to pursue a better shortstop and then push this guy out to center field and just have elite up-the-middle defense? Or do you want to kind of keep him there and keep his floor high, and that way if his bat lags a little bit, you still have a usable major league player? So it's, you know, it comes down to an organizational philosophy as well. Like, I personally think that he can be a serviceable to slightly above average defensive shortstop. And, you know, maybe he even excels and overshoots that a little bit. But it comes down to a couple of different factors. Now, the reason why I think there's, you know, getting back to what Ethan was talking about, why there's such a disparate opinion on where he falls in rankings is that all of those outlets have a different idea of how the hit tool either manifests itself at the major league level, or how the hit tool develops from here until he makes his major league debut, until he, you know, reaches maturity. So, like, you know, someone like Keith Law really values, you know, on-base skills and you know, having it an eye. And those aren't strengths of Tim Anderson's. So he's going to naturally be lower on Keith Law's list because the risk with the bat is so much higher. BP does it a little bit differently. BA does it a little bit differently. I do it a little bit differently. Me, CJ, and everybody at 2080, we all have our own differences. And kind of one of the things that we keep coming back to is that this is a guy who just finds the barrel. And you know, having an eye doesn't always necessarily manifest itself in pretty walk numbers. Like, we would like those. Like, those are great. And we would like to have, you know, really pretty walk or strikeout numbers. But ultimately, especially when you're talking about a rare case like Tim Anderson, you know, you kind of have to either gamble on the tools or, you know, really understand that you're making a statement by putting him in the 50s. And you know, either one is fine. It just comes down to an organizational philosophy or a personal philosophy in Keith Law's situation.
I feel like with a guy like Tim, because he's so young to baseball, like, I guess I would be a little bit more hopeful that the eye comes along later. Like, it doesn't necessarily, like, the fact that Tim Anderson has a minuscule walk rate in the minors doesn't scare me as much as the fact that, like, I don't know, a random prospect has a low walk rate. Like, yeah, he walks in 4.4% of his plate appearances. That's not good. But
right,
it's quite possible that as his eye develops, he's not going to consistently be a major league shortstop or a major league player who walks that rarely. I mean, I mean, Alexei made that work. Alexei made around a 5% walk rate work and be a really good baseball player for a while. So, I mean,
right. Alexei made that work with some really elite defense as well. So, you know, it kind of, yeah, the hit tool is really important, and kind of how it manifests itself in terms of your production. Like, that stuff's important. But when you take the composite of the entire player, it's really, I think it's most important to really take into account what that player is in the total picture. Like, we all look at Yoenis Cespedes, and there's disparate views on how valuable he is because of his walk rate and just kind of like what he does plate discipline wise. And I mean, there are fair criticisms for how he approaches his plate appearances. But, you know, on the aggregate, if you look at him, he's incredibly valuable because he's got just an elite arm. He's got great power. And, you know, when he hits, he hits. So, you know, you have to take the entire player into account. And it's,
you know,
it's go ahead.
You know, what sucks about Rollins being on this team is that he's because of, well, they're both black athletic shortstops with some power. You know, J.P. Crawford has been getting Rollins chops. And you know that there's going to be people who are going to comp Anderson to Rollins.
If you pull up Tim Anderson's baseball reference page right now, there are 6 articles about him, Tim Anderson, where he cited him because of Rollins.
Mm.
Well, part of
it's because of the positional depth, but yes.
Because, yeah, he's next in line.
But there's already mentor.
Are going to compare.
Can Jimmy Rollins teach Tim Anderson how to be a black shortstop?
Can Jimmy Rollins teach Tim Anderson how to hit 300, 350, hey, 530 and win a fucking MVP?
Wait, that, real quick.
The 07.
James, you're on to something. Can Tim Anderson teach me how to be a black shortstop? Yeah, I'm down with that life. That's a good life right there, man.
Ethan, I've said this before. There were back-to-back Phillies MVPs where neither player was the best player on their infield that year.
Because Utley's amazing and very underrated. Like, I'd vote for Utley for the Hall of Fame. But Rollins had a fucking great year that year.
He did.
Rollins hit 30 dingers with plus shortstop defense and had got on base in a 344 rate. And, I mean, obviously 2007 was a different offensive environment than this year. If he does that in this year, he's a 10 war player. But he still, like, that was a hell of a good season, even if it wasn't as good as Chase Utley being, like second base god and just beautiful man.
Yeah. Utley did actually miss 30 games that year, but his OBP was 410 and his slugging was 566.
Rollins got 778 plate appearances that year.
Yeah, that's great.
That's absurd.
How many
leading
triples
off
did he hit,
playing
Ethan?
What?
How many triples did he hit? Do you know?
He hit 20. He had 20 triples.
A lot of triples. A lot of triples in a year.
More than others.
Yeah. But he hit... Fuck you, God. He led off and he got 94 RBIs. And just like, I mean, I miss that era of offense because leading off, playing every single game, 778 plate appearances in a year because he just batted so much. That's insane.
What other prospects for the White Sox are there to watch this thing?
Well, we're on third.
You know, I do think Rollins Park actually did suppress triple C's. That's how much more impressive. Sorry. That's too much what if sports. Please continue.
Okay, so... I mean, their list is looking a lot different ever since they made the Todd Frazier trade. So, you know, it's a system that's kind of trying to fix itself a little bit. And position player-wise, they finally got some interesting guys. Mikko Koskivuori is not going to be a star, but that's a guy who can be kind of maybe even a fringe average third baseman who can occasionally pop in for a little bit and hit for power from both sides of the plate.
Which is more than their system's produced on the position side in like 20 years.
That's sad. It's very sad and very accurate.
If that's what he turns into, like, people forget, White Sox fans forget what it's like to have a system that actually produces, like, even adequate major league position players. But, sorry.
Brent Morrell might have been an adequate position player if his back didn't turn into mush.
Why do they keep getting that guy at third base, the guy whose back turns into mush?
How's Michael Chess's back?
He's a tall, strong kid, so I think it's okay. I think it's all right. But his glove is terrible, so, you know.
Is it?
Yeah,
his arm's supposed to be great.
His arm is very good. The hands are not great. But,
how great is not great? Because, like, is it break your own finger because you can't field balls right, like Mark Tian was?
It's below average. It'd be like a 40. I'd put a 40 on it.
It's not cut your hand open because you can't handle, like, you know, an avocado?
No, it's not Micah Johnson. Micah Johnson's his face is on the 20 on the glove scale. But
does a 70 hands player, like fielder, make that kind of injury to himself with an avocado?
I don't think so. I don't think that's how that works. No. So yeah, then they got Micah Rodolfo, who's going to probably see some full season ball, maybe, but he probably starts in rookie. He's big, strong kid. He's already pretty physically mature.
Should we worry that Micker is still in rookie?
No, he's like 19. He's like, that's about right.
He's younger than me.
Yeah, that's about great. You've just heard of, you've literally heard about him forever. So he's about Eloy Jimenez's age. So and they're on the same developmental track.
I think he was signed right after my senior year of high school. He was 2 years younger than me. He's 18, I think.
No, he's 19.
Oh, Micker? He's 19.
Yeah, Micker's 19.
Oh, but I'm turning 21, so, right, yeah. Okay.
How worried should we be that Fulmer is going to jam his way into the Major League roster a la Tim Anderson?
No, I wouldn't be that worried about it. I think of any of their prospects, Fulmer's the kind of guy that the White Sox have made work most frequently. So
the White Sox don't fuck up pitchers.
No.
Other than Eric Johnson, but, like, he's not good.
I feel like the danger of rushing a pitcher is less than with a hitter because, like, if you can control your stuff, then, like, you know, then that's...
Pitchers don't react. Pitchers act, hitters react.
Exactly. So it's not a matter of, like, the pitcher seeing a lot of things, so...
Right.
Do you... What about, I guess farther away, but if you threw out Micker, do you have... How do you feel about Zingari?
You know, I haven't heard too much about Zangari, but the things that I have heard have been pretty good. I don't have enough familiarity with the player to give you a really good analysis on it.
He's a massive dude.
He looks extraordinarily large. He definitely belongs in the large human.
Got that Adam Dunn, Aaron Judge body.
I've heard his like first base work is not great either. Do you think he could cut his hand open while just like trying to eat an avocado?
His first hand, he throws 97.
What other prospects would cut their hand open trying to eat an avocado?
I don't know. I think what we should be trying to figure out is how well good hands correlate to the ability to hit triples. I think we should probably look into that.
Diane cut himself trying to get an avocado?
Absolutely, without question, Diane cut himself several times.
Yeah, click hands are key for that. Is there anybody? So we talked about. I guess we've been bouncing back and forth between like the Fulmer Anderson guys who are like, you know, pretty close to the majors versus, you know, the Zangari, My Fault, and Micker. Is there anybody else like for spring training specifically that, you know, while we're getting bored waiting for real baseball, like people to keep an eye out for?
You're gonna see Kevon Smith. And I...
What?
It looked really bad. It looked really bad. Okay, so here... This is my question. This is my question. What the fuck is going to happen when Alex Avila goes down? You're going to bring up Brantley, right?
Yeah, I like Brantley.
Right. So Brantley's cool. But, like, then what happens if someone goes down after that? You going to make a trade? Or
why did someone else go down? What happened?
Wait. Don't they have... who's the Rule 5 guy who was their... full-time backup catcher, too.
Nanto is out of the organization.
The Marlins now.
Yeah. Because if you're rolling out there with Rob Brantley and Dionne Navarro, something bad's going to happen eventually. Like, that's not a battery that's going to last.
I've seen worse backup catchers than Rob Brantley, right? I mean,
No, it's not that he's good. It's just that you're going to be running Dionne Navarro out there for a lot of innings. And yeah,
that's the problem. Like, Michael Brantley's a fine backup if you've got A.J. Krasinski, who's going 130 games a year. But if he's Dionne Navarro is supposed to be half a platoon. If the other half of the platoon inevitably gets concussed because his brain is like eggs, right. like eggs, protected by eggshells at this point.
His brain is eggs.
Yeah, but he's gonna get scrambled egg brain.
I think three catchers is plenty.
I mean, it's just
no wonder a catcher is scrambled egg brain.
Yeah, you got two catchers basically. You got two catchers and a time bomb waiting to come off.
Is this a formal diagnosis of scrambled egg brain you keep trotting out here?
Egg.
Do you actually think Kevin Smith is gonna get like run if that happens?
I think you're going to see Kevin Smith innings in the major leagues this year.
Mal, correct me if I'm misremembering, but I don't know if it's on the record or in passing. You've said stuff like Kevin Smith is bad. Kevin Smith sucks.
Oh, I have.
He just said it on the podcast. He said it was really bad last spring.
It was really bad, like really bad. But like, they don't like. Who else do they have? Nieto's gone. Like it's. No.
That's his name.
Was that supposed to be Morin Adrian Nieto?
He did not seem like a major league
catcher while I was watching him.
He wasn't.
They could George Contreras is always available on the minors.
That is true.
Guitarist or whatever.
Right.
So and he can hit three dingers in a game against the White Sox and then get sent down the next day. That was the saddest thing. He just murders the White Sox with three dingers in a game and the next day the Royals demote him.
Because he's a bad catcher.
Dionne Navarro also had three home runs against the White Sox.
He did, in a Cubs uniform.
And then they didn't even bother re-signing him.
Nope. Every bad catcher gets three home runs against the White Sox.
And then he was really good for a full season with the Blue Jays. And despite being very good with the Blue Jays were like, well, let's get this catcher who, according to if framing values are right, is a borderline Hall of Famer.
Ethan, I just want to thank you for reinforcing three as a number for this podcast.
It's a magic number.
Good song.
Oh, man, Russell Martin's 33.
Oh, wow.
He was born in 1983.
Oh.
I don't think Nick's even in on the joke.
It was his birthday a week ago.
We just explained the joke to Nick.
There's a text feature on Skype as well.
Oh, I don't get any of the messages.
We gave him your social, too.
I really have to go.
Wait, I don't see any of the messages.
Thanks for your time, Mal.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
with the social security number, I'll pull like a John Malkovich and use Ethan's younger body to live forever.
All right, I'm going to hang up now. Thanks for having me on, man.
All right.
Bye, Mal.
Bye.
Do you want to keep going?
Yeah.
Go for a little.
Because we got through prospects to watch in spring, and fix the outfield is the next agenda point, which has been the agenda point since December 16th.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, really, it's been the whole offseason. We gave them like a pass while they're doing other things.
Yeah, my coworker came in today and asked me how the Whites, because he's a Nats fan, and he's been an old friend of mine, and he's like, yeah, this is the first like season I'm not like super excited about in years. How did the White Sox do this offseason? I like had to take like a deep breath and like, what's the shortest way I can explain this? Because it's like, well, masterfully, except for the most important things. So, it should have been the easiest thing to accomplish. Here's a question. Adding Rollins in a minor league deal that might be worth $2 million, given some of the similar production and potential issues as you might have had with someone like Alexi Ramirez, how much of this is them like, you know, the market shook out in a way that they weren't expecting and they think Rollins is like, you know, useful for what his cost is, or do you think that they're like really stoked to save $2 million between him and Alexi? Because the way they're acting, it's not just that they're not willing to like add a big free agent, it's like the payroll is down like $10 million lower than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, like there's definitely a commonality with all the signings that make you wonder how strict things are, because everything has been done really inexpensively.
I mean, obviously, like, you're not going to pay Rollins more than this if this is what the market is. And, you know, if people are willing to come play for you for cheap because of your pitching support staff, like in the form of Latos, or because they think they can get a starting job in the form of Rollins, I mean, great. Like, don't bid against yourself. Don't do like an Angels with Torii Hunter thing or a Mariners with Cano thing. But like at the same time, that doesn't mean like it's kind of scary that they still haven't signed a free agent who costs more than the scoreboard that was purchased for them this offseason by the taxpayers of Illinois.
Like, if they wanted Rollins for, like, a buy, like, they got Rollins because no one else is going to give him an opportunity to really compete for a starting job.
Yes.
They could have, like, signed him for less than, like, he was looking for
sure,
a month ago or a month and a half ago or 2 months ago, just based on that. The fact that they, like, waited him out till spring to where they can just get him on, like, a come-in-have-a-minor-league deal makes me think that they're really, like, stringent about spending anything.
And didn't that means they were really looking at Desmond after all, but yeah.
Didn't Nightingale tweet, like, and obviously, grain of salt with anything he tweets, but didn't he say that they're, like, or someone said they're really pushed up against the budget after the Leto signing, which for one sounded wrong to me because I think they actually did offer money, whether it was a lot of money or not, to Cespedes and Gordon. But at the same time, like there was like people saying they're pushed up against, like the Leto signing pushed them up against a budget, and now they're adding $2 million if Rollins makes the team. Like, I don't know. Do they even have money to sign Austin Jackson?
That's what's scary, is because people, and you know, the people who've been trying to reassure me, you know, don't freak out about the new free agent outfielders. They can trade for someone. I'm like, well, but can they? Like, if there's this self-imposed cap, because right now the payroll commitment for next year is, barring random detritus like, you know, Sands and whatever the league minimum to Petrichka and Shuck and guys like that, is what, like $120 million right now?
Yeah, it's a little bit above last year, and relative to the league, it's lower than last year. Like, in the sense that the over, like, league salaries went way up, or not way up, but went up, and White Sox salaries haven't gone up as much.
I mean, it's It's weird. It's really weird. If that's their, it'd be really strange if their budget is a hard cap.
When they're this good, like this is a good team right now. I think this team is a contender with, and if things break right, they could conceivably win the division with this team without making any upgrades. But there's such a high probability of them needing upgrades that I don't get why you'd max out here, especially because what they've spent now is like nothing. They've built an entire infield minus first base plus catcher for $20 million. Like their entire second base, shortstop, third base, catcher is going to be entirely new players from last year, all acquired from this year. And it was like $20 million. They got a guy who, if he hits his upside in Leidos, could be at least a serviceable four starter. And they spent like a total of $23 million, and they lost $20 million in payroll commitments to Alexei and Samardzija. So they've gotten significantly better without adding much money at all and losing a couple players. I don't know why you'd stop here. This doesn't make sense.
If they're at $120 million, last year's 40-man roster ended at $120 million. So they've, you know, it's basically the same. And like you said, relative to the league, it's lower. I don't understand. And like when people talk about, you know, and in other circumstances, you might have some sort of non-player related payroll commitments you have to make. But like you just got a free $7.5 million scoreboard. Like it's free. Like you're not. Like, the biggest piece of overhead is just gone for you. So, like, where I don't know. I don't get it. Is it just you cross your fingers and hope they win a World Series once every, like, 40 years? And
well, from our perspective, we just hope Jerry's not the owner for much longer. And that it's because he sold the team, not because his kids took over. But that's
I wouldn't be remotely shocked if it came out that, like, if they signed Fowler and it was just all this, like, well, we're trying to make all these moves on the cheap to give us flexibility to make this kind of outlay. But I would look at them very suspiciously that kind of thing is ever on the horizon until it does happen.
I agree with that. Like, I've been thinking, okay, I still think they're going to get an outfielder, but that it's still taking this long, it makes me more and more and more suspicious that they're not going to get an outfielder and fear more and more that Avisail Garcia or Jerry Sands or J.B. Schock is going to be the starting right fielder on opening day.
Well, there's – so the thing that confuses me, and James and I talked about this a little bit, is, you know, there are some things that people have floated as reasons why they haven't made a move yet that wouldn't make sense. So, for example, if they're saying we refuse to give up a draft pick, that is not how I feel about it, but, like, a sane, rational person can feel that way. That's fine.
They could do very well in the draft this year, for what it's worth, with the $10 million dollars they had to spend.
Oh, yeah, so with the 10 pick, the 27 pick, and the 42, 43?
Yeah, they're in a really nice position with the draft. Not that excuses not spending, but no, maybe you don't want to spend Fowler, but...
It's just, right, but it's just weird to me that it's like, okay, so why isn't Austin Jackson here yet? Like, if that's true.
Or why didn't they go harder on Cespedes?
Yeah, it's just strange, and if they are, and there is that fear for me too, where if people say, well, you can make a trade. If you're gonna make a trade that's going to get you a meaningful player in any way, and I don't even mean, like, you've talked me, Ethan, your Twitter's definitely talked me out of being interested at all in Jay Bruce under pretty much any circumstances.
Oh, you missed the beginning of this podcast.
Oh, okay. Well,
we talked a lot of shit about Jay Bruce.
Okay, so if you're going to do that, you're either going to have to give up a lot of talent, and in which case you're going to, you know, it's going to, that costs you more than, like, getting up a draft pick for Fowler would, or you're going to have to, like, take on a lot of money from a team who's trying to dump a contract, in which case, why the hell didn't you just sign a free agent? You know what I mean? Like, it's hard for me to find the player that satisfies both concerns.
The one issue with the free agents is maybe they really did have a hard line on the draft and Cespedes was their guy. And Cespedes just said, I'm going to the Mets for cheaper because I want this opt out and I want this specific deal and I want to stay with the Mets for this, which is kind of how it happened.
Well, the AAV is pretty – that's the highest AAV for an outfielder ever.
Yeah, and for this year, if he opts out after this year, he's going to get $30 million for a year and then be on the free agent market again. So no, that's
it's a phenomenal financial deal, like just on the money.
Right. So I get like – but then – so maybe they missed out on that and they really wanted him, but it didn't work. And maybe they like considered the other guys – didn't want Upton for whatever reason. And I think that they seemed really in on Gordon because they wanted someone who's an elite defensive player, because I don't think they super with Eaton in center. And it just didn't work. Okay. But then, like, you can't just be like, oh, none of this worked, so let's stick with Avi. You need to have you need a big upgrade over Avi, and there are guys out there, but they, like you said, they need money. I think that Kemp would make sense. I think that Braun, like, on paper makes sense.
Yep.
But I'm not going to go say, oh, the White Sox are going to go out and get Ryan Braun, because that hasn't even remotely been close to what has been in the rumors. Like,
no, but I mean, think even the Brewers guy who's been, like, rumored to, like, Lucroy, like, wants a trade. And there haven't been any Lucroy trade rumor. So like,
there was today. The Astros tried to trade for him, but couldn't match up.
Oh, really? But, I totally missed that. It was
small report for like what the magnitude of what that is, considering how big Lucroy is as a player. And the trade
right there. I seriously think the Nationals should trade for him, but like that's neither here nor there. Like, I agree. Like Braun would make a ton of sense, but that's, like if they're not in on Fowler, and we haven't heard a thing about him. So
what is happening?
Sorry, I'm trying to unload my draining rack.
If we had a drinking game for this podcast, it would definitely be like Ethan makes a noise and somebody asks about like what the hell he's doing. Because you've been like playing with springs or like pens and
last week I got printer cartridge ink on my hand while during the podcast.
Yeah, like
in the first minute too.
It might have been before we were recording.
No, because I think I missed the podcast and heard it on the podcast.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, so you were talking about trade?
Yes.
Like Braun and...
Kemp. I mean, Kemp would be a really fucking good hitter, and I like the idea, but, like, that doesn't... Your defense is terrible if you're lining up Kemp, Eaton, and Melky in the outfield, and an infield of Frazier, Rollins, Laurie, and Abreu. That's holy shit bad defense. That's like
you're really counting on, I don't know, like Eaton to just cover everybody and for Laurie to use his athleticism like really well at second base, which he hasn't done historically.
Right. And you're basically like earlier 2010 Detroit Tigers level bad defensively. But luckily you're playing in a much smaller park than that place.
And also, you have a bunch of pitchers who like miss bats like crazy and induce a ton of weak contact, and you'd hit a ton of bombs. Also, like the formula the Tigers used to like destroy everybody in the AL for a while, like that works. It's like ugly, but it works.
Yeah, I mean, I would be on board with Kemp. I think he's for one because I think he does profile much better in a corner at the Cell than in center at Dodger Stadium or even the corner at Petco.
Yep.
I think that the speed, even if he's bad at route reading, he's at least better defensively than Avisail.
I find it hard to believe that a guy who, I know he's had some injuries, but a guy who was once like
very serious injuries.
Yes, I know, but he was like a solid.
Your arthritic hips are not good.
No, but the idea that like all of a sudden he can't like read a ball off the bat is like, you know what I mean? Like they made Jermaine Dye work for forever, so I actually don't think it's the worst comp for Kemp at this point. But
yeah, actually, Dye, he kind of is like where Dye was when they acquired him. What was that? It'd be before 2005, but like he was with the Royals or the A's, and he was just like always broken, and then he never got hurt with the White Sox.
He broke his leg because he fouled a ball off of his shin, like straight down. I'd never seen it before.
And then he fouled a ball off of his bat, but got hit by a pitch, and then there was a grand slam. Because the bat totally hit the ball. And if there was replay, he would not be on first. Just like if there was a replay, AJ would not be on first.
this is heresy, and we won't stand for it.
Yeah, I really apologize to our listeners for Ethan's up at his bedtime. This is terrible.
Hey, I was a very rational 10-year-old during that World Series.
But is there, like...
Really? Like, after they're pouring the champagne on each other? Like, well, you know... Most of these guys kind of peaked this year. It wasn't really a talented
group. No, I'm kidding.
Cliff Polite and Neil Kotz are not going to repeat this performance.
Cliff Polite, Neil Kotz, and Dustin Hermanson combined for, like, the same ERA minus as 1999 Pedro that year in the same amount of innings.
That's true talent.
Like,
yeah, the worst reliever on that team, like, by ERA that they used regularly was Damaso Marte. With his 3.77 ERA in that era,
like, would go on to like have filthy years with the with other teams, right?
And before and after, yeah, Marte was excellent his entire career.
And wasn't Luis Vizcaino? How much did they use Luis Vizcaino? I just know that he was on the team because he was traded for Lee, and I do not remember him whatsoever.
70 innings. He was good too. He was their long guy. And McCarthy was their only other starter that they used.
Yeah, Marte had that year, and then the White Sox were like, "We're sick of your shit." After that kind of year.
and it was still a solid year. Like, that would have been the best bullpen year on the 2014 White Sox. Well, I guess Putnam had a random really good ERA, but he didn't even feel good.
James, fix right field before I go to bed.
Sign Dexter Fowler, I guess.
What else? We don't have money for that. What else?
Fold the team.
Trade for Jay Bruce. Or Michael Saunders, two guys who are now off the market.
Come full circle.
Is that trade through at this point? It might be the time we go to air, but...
It's not, like, the way the beats are talking about it seems like it's through. Like, you know how you usually get that feeling? Like, the only trade I can remember in recent memory that was, like, this close to confirmed without being confirmed that didn't go through was the Carlos Gomez trade. Get Carlos Gomez for whatever. Like, that'd be sick. Except I don't think that makes sense for the Astros to do. I know Tom was onto that, and it would make sense if they had like done something else like signed Cespedes, but at this point in the offseason, I don't think they're trading Carlos Gomez.
Saunders became less interesting when all the meniscus got taken out of his knee.
Yeah, no, he's not interesting, and he's also an angel.
I used to really like him, but yeah.
I think he was kind of overrated by the Mariners Twitter baseball contingent. Don't tell that to I don't or whatever, but
I like that he was just like pretty good at everything.
We've low key like attacked half the baseball media world during this podcast, and
yeah,
so really there's nothing left to lose.
There's some Mariners tweeters I like, it's just not the Cammy Cams people that I like.
Would the A's make Reddick available as they speed towards like another 95 loss season?
That was like a thought that I had going into the offseason. They didn't seem like they were shopping him at all, but he'd be a lot better than what they have.
He just screams like dude who's gonna hit .210 with the White Sox.
Oh, totally. 100%. And why I was really like when the Indians got Brandon Moss last year, I'm like, yeah, for one, he wasn't good with the Indians, but for two, like if that dude was on the White Sox, he would be so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Nick Markakis.
That's another money-eating guy, but he's also bad.
He had a 110 OPS plus last year.
Really?
He had a 370 OBP and a 376 slugging.
I think I watched like three Braves games last year.
All right. What'd you do?
Julio Teheran I thought would be cool for a bit.
Shelby Miller, baby. All right. That's all I got for you guys. Sorry, I got a long day tomorrow. But
We have like an hour and 20 minutes now, 30 minutes of content.
I came in late and I'm at an hour and 10, so I gotta call it. But it's been a pleasure, gentlemen.
This was a fun podcast. I like this one. It wasn't bad.
So the fun podcast just means borders on unpublishable.
Isn't that apparent? Like that makes a lot of sense.
It's our brand.
Yeah, I mean, are we still recording?
I'll stop right now before you say whatever you're going to say.
Yeah, sorry, Jane's...